Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
Great, and
We did. If you'd like to just give us a little introduction of yourself and how you got into the party, the Constitution Party, that would be great.
Yeah. A few years ago, probably around 1999 or so, I started getting involved in politics and was looking for a political party which met my beliefs, and I thought I had found it in the Republican Party. I served as a delegate there for my community for a few years, learning the process, and I learned that the process was failed in the Republican Party. Good candidates would always be there for convention, and they would never make it out. And at that time, I went to a meeting at the Red Lion Hotel where we had Ron Paul speaking. I believe it was back in 2004, and there was a political party called the Constitution Party that was asking for signatures to get on the ballot. And I gave them my signature, and 2 years later, I joined the party and started running for office because they came to me and asked me if I would.
Okay, great, and here you are. Well, I tell you what, I know you have limited time tonight, so we will go on with the questions. And kind of as an introduction, we're going to start with campaign finance. As I mentioned, your Republican challenger for this open seat has significantly outraised all contenders, including the primaries. And what I have here is, as of the end of July, the latest FEC report, Stewart has raised over $272,000. Now, what we have I have here is a cash on hand of $115,000, $65,000 of which is debt. So he has had, of the 1st of August, $50,000 in his campaign treasury. Now, I have one report. Stewart recently received about $55,000 from business interests and $38,000 in contributors from, I quote, ideological interests, whatever those are. So this will start off with the first question, which is, how is it possible to compete for any citizen, actually to compete for elective office against this kind of money machine in politics?
That's a great question. My answer to that is by a grassroots method. That's meaning a neighbor or a friend recommendation is going to go farther than money can. And you couple this with a sure foundation of knowledge, then we become unstoppable. We need to only overcome the fear that we have, which inhibits us to talking to our neighbors, our friends, about important matters. Things that should be commonplace. If something's important to you, you should be talking about it. What's not more important than freedom? The freedom to do things, the freedom to live.
Okay. Yeah, and that's definitely something we've seen in the, at least on the Republican part, in the way Mitt Romney pretty much outspent all of his competitors combined. And we see what that kind of money can do. So I agree, it's going to take a grassroots, from the bottom up effort in order to compete with that kind of money. As someone of like what we've seen with the Tea Party in 2010, I really think that we're going to once again have the need for something of that nature.
Definitely. And the younger people are now starting to see what people that's been following politics for years and have been passionate for freedom have seen for many years, and they're starting to latch onto that. You can see that with the Ron Paul movement, how many young people supported him, the Tea Parties, everything. Everybody's starting to recognize what's going on, and they're starting to find ways around it. The Internet's one of the great ways to find around it.
Right, and actually one of the things about the Internet where I think that it's going to be and especially Blog Talk Radio being a part of it, the new media of the 21st century. For one, people are able to get their own information without relying on the mainstream media and what I call, not just myself, but many call the so-called conservative media, such as Faux News or Fox News, and then other of your talk radio show hosts who, in my opinion, especially in the primaries, abandoned the conservative ideology by really staying quiet on conservative candidates and kind of helping to push what in my mind, and as many, is a moderate to liberal candidate in Mitt Romney. Now, Mr. Stewart, go back to your opponent, Mr. Stewart, does not have a record to run against beyond standard platitudes. Now, Stewart has not offered any specific plans, not even specifics on the, quote, red meat items his campaign has mentioned, such as Medicare, the tax code, or immigration. So basically, it appears you are not running against a record, but you are running against a plan. Now, the question is, do you believe that you are running against money, against the purchase of this open seat by one of the two big box partisan parties? And would that be a fair assessment to say that?
I don't necessarily believe I'm running against money. Here in Utah, I believe I'm running against the Republican name. Lots of people here, the Republican, you see the voting records, like 80% Republican voting. Most people just sit there and look and see what party you're affiliated with, and if it says an R on it, they check the person whose name's there without doing any research whatsoever. As for myself, I am running for principles over politics. I had some friends in the Republican state convention where they had, I think it was upwards to 11 candidates seeking the second congressional district from the Republican Party, and one of those was a wild card that was thrown out during the speeches, and it made a big dent in maybe the results of what happened at the Republican convention. So I would like to know what would have happened if that had not been thrown out. Would Chris Stewart have been the one that received the nomination, or would it have been one of the other candidates?
Okay. Now, another thing that it seems like the Republican and the Democrats are trying to keep from the third parties is the ability to debate with the candidates. At least we've seen that in the presidential debate so far. I know that they were trying to get Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, and Virgil Goode in some of the debates starting last night. I know there's a debate, and I just want to give a plug out for this debate, is October 23rd is going to be a debate with Virgil Goode and Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, and then one other from a party I'm honestly not familiar with. So, but for your level, for the level you're running on, are you going to have any debates scheduled in which you might be able to put your limited government constitutional plans and visions forward as a contrast compared to what the Republican or the Democrat have to offer, or say they have to offer?
We are working on that right now. I have a person in contact with me named Eric Kirby. He's down at SUU, and we're trying to get a debate scheduled for October 24th. We're trying to get the details on that, and we're hoping to have all the candidates involved in that that are running for the 2nd Congressional District.
Okay, and how much longer will it be before you guys would get any information on that?
I had gotten some things on that. The latest I had gotten was about 3 days ago on that, and they said they'd be emailing me more information as it comes. They said that Chris Stewart had committed to it, but I don't know if it was a firm commitment or not.
Okay. Well, yeah, definitely. How are you planning on putting that out once you get the word?
I will be doing it through the Utah Constitution Party website, epUtah.org, and also through my personal Facebook page.
And yes, while we're at it, so we can have this on the archives, if you would, I'm sure you have, do you have a website or anything of that nature in which people can look at what your plans are and what your policies will be, and possibly a place for them to donate to your campaign? Do you have a website directly for your campaign?
Right now I'm putting everything through our Utah Constitution Party website. I'm getting my webpage up and running. I have some campaign people working on that right now.
Oh, great.
And I'm trying to get that up and running. It's not quite functional yet. And so I just recommend people go to the Constitution Party, Utah Constitution Party webpage.
Okay. And where I'd like to move on to now is a couple quotes I have here, and this is about principles. Now, you said, by the way of justification for your run as a Constitution Party candidate for the U.S. House seat, you said, I cannot sit back and watch my children's freedom slip away. Now, in each of these quotes I got here, if you could elaborate, I have three of them. If you could elaborate on these, I'd appreciate it. So the first one is where you were quoted saying, I cannot sit back and watch my children's freedom slip away.
Okay. So I'm 38 years old, recently turned 38, and in my short life, I have seen many of my own freedoms taken away. When I go to the airport, I feel like a criminal now because I have to go through a pat-down search. It's simple things. I go to school and I'm not able to wear certain T-shirts that say the word God or show any religion whatsoever. And these are some of the freedoms that are slipping away. And I keep on wondering what other things will slip away. We keep on hearing about the Patriot Act and some of the freedoms that it's taken away. I just try and fast forward that and see if we keep on the same path, what do my kids have to look forward to? Will they be able to experience the greatest country in the world, or are they going to experience a country like over in Europe or over in Asia? I want them to experience America, the greatest country that we've seen on the earth to this date.
And what would you bring up about America, what would your vision be? I know some feel and think that America is kind of moving away from the core values it's once had. What would be your vision for America, as, let's say, when or if the Constitution Party was to become a dominant party?
Well, America was founded on Christian principles. If you look at the founding documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, we find out that all men were created equal and that they were given inalienable rights by their creator. And that's different and unique than any other government out there in the world. We recognize that our rights don't come from government. We recognize they come from the creator. If they came from government, you have to ask your question, if government can give you something, can it take it away? And the answer is yes. If you recognize that your rights come from a higher power than government, then government is not allowed to take them away. That's why we declared independence.
Okay, now one of the things that, you know, I've been saying on Bard's logic for months and months, especially from the detractors who are saying that, Robert, you got to get behind Romney. It's Romney now. It's who we have, because, there's no secret. I was a Republican for many years, and I was a Newt Gingrich supporter when we, for the Republican Party during the primaries. And so, when they start moving away from what I considered conservative principles, and I start talking about party or principles over party, and that's why I could no longer support and try to get out the word basically for the Republican Party. That's one of the reasons why, at least for me, that we're vetting the different third parties, because I don't think that the Republican Party, which I used to believe was the party of principles. I no longer think that's the case, at least how things stand. And, you know, of course, I've been saying that a long time, you know, kind of a mantra, you know, principle over party. Now, you have said we need elected officials that will stand for principles over politics. And if you could elaborate on that.
Right. We need our elected officials to know that their actions have more repercussions than just the immediate. They need to know that they will be accountable at some point before God. But as well as that, we need our elected officials to be standing for correct principles and not worrying about what team they're on. If you think of like a basketball team or a football team, everybody's rooting for their team and they're competing against each other. And that's what it seems like when you look at the Democrat and the Republican Party. They're competing against each other. So if a policy is put forth by a Democrat, the Republicans will sit there and say, no, we don't want it. But as soon as that exact same policy is put forth by a Republican, they say, hey, he's on our team. Let's put that through right now. And so they're not standing off principles. They are basically just playing a game. And the ones that suffer from that is us as American people.
Right, and that actually reminds me of something of what Newt Gingrich has said about, and I'm not going to digress much, but what Newt Gingrich said about, you know, environmental protection or anything, you know, regarding environmental protection is that if it comes from the Democrat Party, then the Republicans have a knee-jerk reaction to say no, and what that's done is that makes it appear that not that the Republicans are against what the Democrats stand for, but are actually against protecting the environment, which, of course, that's not the case, but that's the way it makes it appear by that reaction, you know, that you've just described. But as I said, I'm not going to digress too much on that. I just, you know, want to move on. So the third thing, the quote I want to mention is you've said, our elected officials need to be statesmen, not politicians. Now, can a statesman be purchased, as Republicans have apparently seemed to believe, with political machine money, or is a statesman something altogether different?
A statesman is entirely different than that. A statesman is somebody that understands correct principles, is willing to act upon them regardless of consequence. So we find statesmen occasionally in office where they will stand up to the party that they belong to, and as a result, they kind of get ridiculed or kicked out. The party puts another person up for the coming election, and then they support that person instead of the one that was standing by principles. They don't like statesmen there. They don't like people that are doing things right, correct, for the people. They want it for their team.
Okay. Yeah, that's, we've definitely been seeing, we have definitely been seeing a lot of that. So I'm going to move on with the next one. We're going to talk about one of the opponents, actually about Congressman Matheson, who is considered in the top 10 most vulnerable congressmen. Now, with that understanding, Matheson has now been redistricted into Utah's new 4th district, and with the current voter opinions of both the Democrat and Republican parties at all-time lows, will former District 2 incumbent Matheson's vulnerability provide an opportunity for the Constitution Party?
In the 4th Congressional District, we do not have a Constitution Party candidate running this time period, this election cycle. But as a result, he was running in the 2nd Congressional District prior to that, and then he changed halfway through to go to the 4th Congressional District, which left the 2nd Congressional seat open, as you had said earlier. And so that does give an opening here in the 2nd Congressional District for the Constitution Party.
Okay, so I'm just replying to a chat real quick. I apologize for that. It's one of the It's one of the jobs of the host. I've got people chatting with me on different forums here. So what do you believe that the chances are of the Constitution Party, winning not just a seat but perhaps even larger in the like for Ohio, for instance, because that's where I'm from, is Ohio. I believe that if you take a lot of the conservatives who are just going to sit out and combine them with the independents who consider themselves conservatives, and also bring aboard a good number of the disaffected Republicans, and if those could be drawn into the Constitutional Party or Constitution Party. With that being said, what do you believe are the chances of success for 2012 and beyond? Well, not beyond, but we'll talk about that later. But for 2012?
2012 looks to be a good year for us as we're gaining ballot access in many of the states that we've never been on ballot access before. The Constitution Party is growing everywhere. It's well organized. It continues to receive, I'm a moderator for our national Facebook page, and
mm-hmm.
I'm receiving daily requests for people to subscribe to our Facebook page all the time, multiple times a day. And so that's something that I haven't seen before in the last few years. So everyone, Cynthia Davis running everywhere, we're receiving a lot of press from Virgil Goode, our
mm-hmm.
presidential candidate, and it's been very positive, everything that we've been seeing. And so we have a good chance this year. Here in Utah, last year we had some people, our last election cycle, we had some elected from the Constitution Party, and we're hoping to grow that this year into our state races, our state House of Representatives and state Senate.
Well, I do know, last night we tried the Ohio state chairman for the Constitution Party on last night. Unfortunately, there's some technical difficulties, so we're looking to reschedule, I believe, for next Wednesday. With that, actually, I need to give him a call tomorrow at some point to try to confirm that. So the Ohio State Chairperson for the Constitution Party, I believe, next Wednesday, as we're looking at. But I know in Ohio, as I said, because that's where I'm from, I know Virgil Goode is on the not as a write-in candidate, but actually, as a on the ballot a candidate, Virgil Goode and Clymer are on there. So, but in Utah, you have a fairly well organized party, do you not? And at least relative to many of the other states.
Yes. I know that initially our party got organized quite early on. As I said earlier, in 2004, they were asking for signatures for the Constitution Party to be allowed on the ballot, and I was at a function where they were asking for those signatures. And then in 2006, with all their hard work, they had over 70 people on the ballot for national and local races. And that's continued to be approximately how many they have on the ballot. This year we had a primary with our governor candidates. There was Brandon May and Kirk Pearson who were running as the governor, ended up in a primary, and Kirk Pearson was the one that received the vote on the primary. We had a good turnout for a primary for a third party as well.
And I think that's going to become, in my opinion, of course, but I think that's going to become more and more common with the third party. I think that many will start to wake up to see how the two-party system, the Democrat-Republican duopoly, is actually, especially, recent within, at least the past, you know, 4 years, of course, probably even, you know, a lot longer than that, has done a disservice to America and the American people. But continuing on, you have run for the Utah legislature twice. Do you believe that the running in 2008 and 2010 has increased your name recognition to the Utah voters in District 2 for 2012?
Definitely. In those areas that I was running for the state legislature, it was areas that are contained in the 2nd Congressional District. But more so than name recognition is I've grown up in this area of Utah, and a lot of my friends that have lived here have moved to other various parts of the state, and they know who I am. They know what I've stood for throughout the years, even when I was in high school, even when I was in grade school. They knew that I would be fair and honest with people, and that's something that takes a lifetime to achieve, and it can take a few minutes to destroy if you don't keep that trust. And I hope to keep that trust with everybody. I hope to be a statesman and never a politician.
Now, speaking of that, and I think that can, you know, hold true, you know, it's just in Utah, perhaps, and of course, you know, other states. And what I mean by that is that the constitutional stance of government, and that, do you believe that the Utah voters, that the constitutional message is conducive to that state, to your state? And perhaps compared to others or elsewhere?
No. I think it's conducive to the entire country as a whole. I think what we've been getting is a watered-down education in the area of the Constitution. As people learn and study from it in all walks of life, whether it be in Texas, whether it be in North Carolina, whether it be up in the Dakotas, as they read from it and they understand it, it catches on to them. It starts to build a fire within them, a burning desire for freedom. And so, no, I don't think it's just here in Utah, because as I visit people and talk to people from across the world, I see it happening there too. I have a good friend that I met while I was in North Carolina. I was living there for a few years, and I met him on the Marine base. He found me later on through Facebook, and it was funny to find out that he had joined the Constitution Party. So one of my friends that had the same principles and values that I did, acted the same way, we got along really well, found the exact same party that I did. That's not a coincidence. It just means that people are looking, and when they see it, they know that it's right, and they will join.
Okay, going back to my list here, I was like, as I said, sometimes I multitask here. And let's see, let me bring myself back here to, okay, great, where I'm at now. I see, and I haven't mentioned this in the introduction or the bio, is that you have a degree in electrical engineering and have been employed in various construction companies in Utah. So, in a very real sense, you have had a direct hand in building the new Utah. You were then employed by Primerica, an insurance company, which now trades on the New York Stock Exchange. It says the vice chairman of Toole County Constitution Party. Is that your vice chairman of the Toole County Constitution Party?
Actually, now our vice chairman was elected to state chairman, so I am now the chairman of the Tooele County Constitution Party.
Oh, well, thank you very much for the update. Thank you, and it's you're also involved in scouting.
Yeah,
I guess the Boy Scouts or something of that nature. Or?
I have been involved with the Boy Scouts, with the Cub Scouts, with all areas of the youth, and it's been a great service to do. I was an Eagle Scout. That was an accomplishment there, and it's an accomplishment I'm proud of. I know the scouting program does a good thing for teaching people about citizenship in both the community, the nation, and the world, and I appreciate their help in that manner. I'm registered as a merit badge counselor for our community for some of those particular merit badges. I have a correction also.
Sure, go ahead.
Electrical engineering. I was studying electrical engineering, but I did not receive my degree yet. I actually had my wife involved in a car accident, which made it so that I had
I'm sorry to hear that.
And as I paid some bills, it kept me out of school. But as such,
I
was able to purchase a home and start my family. And so my wife didn't mind that we have a family started now. I have 5 children.
Oh, my gosh, great. Well, that's more than started.
they
wow.
Keep us busy.
Wow, that's great. That's great. I, you know, I mean, personally, I like to hear, you know, folks still out there having the larger, and 5 would be nowadays considered a large family.
Right.
So, no,
well,
I'd like to.
We would do it bigger, but first we have to get a bigger vehicle because our vehicle is filled now. So that's,
you understood.
That's our next goal.
Okay, but understood. Moving on is, so how has your previous experience qualified you for representing your constituents in Utah's U.S. District 2?
Okay. Well, as such, I've worked in a construction company for quite a few years. I'm actually a foreman of the construction company I'm working for, KDP Homes, and I've actually seen government involvement in small businesses and the regulations they have, and what they call service is not necessarily service. It's like hoops that you have to jump through to be able to get a home going for people that want a home. Here in Tooele City, they have specific mandates that they give that the house has to be a certain size, has a certain frontage, have so much brick, so much this, so much that, all of these stipulations. And that pushes the price of the house up out of the affordable range for some people. And if we're looking at a free country, if somebody wants to build a home and they only have so much money, shouldn't they be allowed to build the home that they can instead of having to meet all of these basically visual requirements that the city is searching for? I've also, along with my previous experience, I've hosted classes on the Constitution. And I've studied it on my own. I've taken classes from the Institute on the Constitution by Peruka and Peruka, Stephen Pratt, Scott Bradley, Gary and Carolyn Alder, and Ken Bowers. And I've read numerous books, including some from Cleon Skousen, on government. So.
Okay, so what would you be taking to Washington, D.C. that they are missing there? Now, of course, certainly they are not missing more political machine money. So what else is it that you have and that you believe that Washington needs?
Okay. I bought my first home in 2002, and in 2008 I paid it off. I had 4 kids during this time period as well. I had a single income. My wife is a stay-at-home mom, and she also homeschools her children. And so last year I purchased a larger home for my growing family, and I'm going to plan on having it paid off early as well. I have a personal budget. In the field of construction, it's kind of a feast or a famine, as you would say, because in the summer months you have a lot of work and a lot of daylight, and in the winter months you have a lot of rain and not so much work. And so my budget is based differently every single month, and I've been able to compensate for that. And I see back in Washington and even in our local governments, them taking a budget from last year, getting an increase from that just because it's a new year and it's an inflation increase, and then they ask for more, and they still can't seem to get done what I'm able to do on my personal budget for my own family. I'm able to adapt, and it seems like they're just asking for more. I understand the Constitution is to hold down the government. It's not to hold down the people. It's to hold down the government. It's rules for the government, not the people. So those are some of the things that I'm taking back to Washington that they don't have there currently.
Okay, well, one thing I'd like to do is go, because this is a very important issue. I mean, I don't know how much, to be honest, in Utah this would have an effect, perhaps more so than, of course, that I know, is your Republican opponent has said regarding our nation's failed immigration laws and policies. I've got a quote. It says, because of this failure, illegal immigration has become a national security threat. Of course, duh, right? But worse, your opponent has offered no workable plan to resolve that failure. Now, on this program, Bard's Logic, on the 17th of September, Constitution Party candidate for president, the Honorable Virgil Goode, was very specific and very forthright in his plan to resolve our immigration problems. Now, he detailed some of the costs of illegal immigration on our social and educational programs. One, public school alone adds an additional annual taxpayer finance expense due to illegal immigrant in the excess of $340 million. Now, one thing Mr. Goode said is he recommended that no child should be admitted into the U.S. public education without providing a document of their birth certificate. And then, two, he also mentioned building a, quote, full real border fence, and even described the general architecture required for such a fence, which parallel roads on both sides and wire-fenced obstacles on the shoulders of each road. Also, and I must admit that this is probably one of my favorite things that he said, is recommending a moratorium on green card admissions until our economy stabilized at an unemployment rate below 5%. So that being said, are you in agreement with Mr. Goode's position on legal and illegal immigration? And more to the point, you think that'll be, as I said, necessary in Utah?
I agree with what he's talking about there, definitely. And yes, it does have a place here in Utah. I'm in the construction field, and so I see immigrants that are coming here, not legally, and they actually get paid a lower wage than the people that here are working the same jobs legally. So it's actually opened up an area of kind of like a slave labor market type thing. They don't want to be reported, so they'll work for less to keep somebody happy, but it's more than they've ever received in other countries before. And that's something that needs to stop. Another thing that can be added to this immigration policy is to sit there and give a two-year time period for people that are here illegally to go back to their places of origin without any penalty in the United States, so that they can, once they're back in their countries of origin, they can apply to come to the United States legally. And now if they overstay that two-year time period, and then they would be prosecuted by our laws on immigration. But to just give them a chance to put their affairs in order. Immigration is very important here for the United States. When people come here legally, they learn how our country operates. They learn more about the Constitution than most people learn that are citizens already here. And as such, they learn what makes our country great. They realize the difference from the country they were just at, that they immigrated from, to our country, and they see what a positive benefit that is. In my local community, we have some people that had immigrated here legally, and they had to apply for citizenship, and they took the courses, and it was amazing to them to actually see how this worked and why it wasn't working in their own countries, and they're much better for it. If they were to go back to their own countries even now, they would have a great understanding, and they could be a beacon to everywhere else, their own nations, their own countries, because they saw how it worked. But if we just let people in here without this knowledge, then they're going to bring the knowledge that they had from their prior countries, which isn't a free nation. It's not a free nation. That's the reason they wanted to leave, is because it wasn't giving them what they wanted, what they desired, the freedom.
But does Utah even have problems with illegal aliens?
Yes. Yes, they do. Like I say, I work in the construction industry, and I see people that are willing to work for less money.
That's true. I came across that just last week, something like that, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry if I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, they're just trying to make it. But once again, I don't think it's very fair for them to be here illegally, in the sense that they have to be paid lower wages. Let's get them to, if it takes education, let's teach them how to immigrate to the United States correctly. Let's give them a checklist of what they need to do to come here legally, instead of sneaking over the fence or through the waters or whatever it may be, and putting whoever's bringing them here, putting our border agents in danger, and sometimes they lose their lives, like we just recently saw.
Mm-hmm.
As for the fences and the technology, we have the technology to seal our borders. We have the technology to seal Iraq's borders. We can seal our own, too. We can prevent people from coming in, unless they're coming here legally or for a specified purpose, but we're just not willing to do so. There's reasons why, and I'm not going to get into all of that right now, but a lot of it has to do with people staying in power.
Okay. Well, second, there's somebody who I have to reply to here. They're on hold, and they'd like to speak with you, but we've got a few more questions here. Yes, we have actually one of the folks, one of the members of the Bard's Logic Political Talks panel on hold. I do see your chat, Kelly, and we have just a few more questions left. So if you could put in the chat whether you would be able to hold, and if Mr. Gerard would be open to some other questions, that would be great. So let me know whether you're able to hold, Kelly. I'll just sit on air and let folks know he's there. So it's getting a little. How much time do you have with us this evening, Mr. Gerard?
Well,
do you have a?
I arranged for my children to be attended by a babysitter, and I said that I'd be done shortly after 8. So I have till a few minutes after 8, basically.
Okay, and that when I am in Eastern time. And so what time is it there now? It's about 10 o'clock here now.
It's about 10 minutes to 12 minutes to 8. So I probably
You only have 12 more minutes. Well, I guess it kind of went long. What I'd like to do is I'd like to have, if you'd like, if we could schedule this. And, of course, you don't have to answer this now because you're on air. I don't want to put you on the spot. But I definitely would like to have you back in the show if that's possible to finish off some of these questions, but if we could go ahead and would you be open to me having Kelly come in, since you only have 12 minutes, and he's got a question about third parties and strategy with involving the Tea Party, it looks like. So would you be open to that, Mr. Gerard?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, sir. Well, Kelly, your mic is live. Go ahead and chime in.
Well, hey, Mr. Gerard, this is Kelly Mordecai. I'm just glad you're running for office. Many, many respects to you. My plan in a couple of years, I want to throw this out to you. See, the debate seemed to be close to Republicans and Democrats only. However, congressional races can be different. In a few years, I want to run on a Libertarian ticket for the sole purpose. I'm not going to plan to win, but I'm planning to have a constitutional challenge to our present representatives. I'm going to, we got one, LaMalfa, he's probably going to win. He knows the Constitution. And then we got a Democrat that'll try. I know LaMalfa will do it, get into a constitutional challenge. This is the constitutional challenge, right? Hosted by the Tea Party. You have a point system, a whole bunch of questions about the Constitution prepared. You don't know what they are, the other candidates don't. You get the other candidates there, and then what happens is it's a point system. If you answer first, you get 10 points. If you answer correctly, you get plus 5. Bonus point of plus 5 if you had a court case deciding that, you know, the anyway. And so what will happen is, and somebody in your position, if your Tea Party will host it, you're going to cream them all. You don't know the questions. Nobody does. And you're going to look stellar. It's called a constitutional challenge. And, of course, things like this will go YouTube and they'll go viral. I'm not in a position right now to do this, but in a couple of years I want to do this. And I just put out as a suggestion. Obviously, if you approach a Tea Party, you're the first candidate, and then that will pressure the Republican and the Democrat to show up as well. And the Tea Party will figure out how to do the point system and everything else, and I think it would just be stellar.
Definitely. We have to think outside of the box to be able to start competing with these big parties, because they've been around for so many years, and they've said the same thing over and over again. Well, you have to vote for the Democrat or the Republican will win. You have to vote for the Republican and then the Democrat will win. They just keep on saying the same thing, and so everybody believes it. One of the things that I'd like to see happen on this is when they list your name on the ballot, to not be able to have a Republican, Democrat, Constitution Party, whether it's Libertarian Party, Green Party, any of those listed after the name of the person, so that the people actually have to do their homework and know who they're voting for.
Yeah. The reason why I'm suggesting this is when the public sees, you know, the Constitution, and these people are fumbling and fluttering and have no clue about the Constitution, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them get a negative point total score. That's why we put a negative 5 in case they get it wrong. It's just like, and I'm telling you this more so because the CNN, I got a hold of this, who won the debate? The question is, who did debate make you most likely to vote for? Romney, 35%, Obama, 18%, neither, 47%. And when you come across like this, I hope you have enough time to do this. But and if they don't show up, challenge a typical citizen as your contender. Whatever it takes to show, and I've seen this over and over, people come to the Tea Party, they want to run for office, they ask them a few key constitutional questions, they fail. They fumble. It's a joke. I mean, I believe that would rally an enormous amount of Tea Party support behind you.
Okay. I know the local Tea Party leader here in Tooele area, so I'll have to get in touch with her.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we've got about 6 minutes before Mr. Gerard has to go. So I'd like to say thank you very much for coming in tonight. And I definitely, as I said, we've had some more questions we'd like to have gotten to. But, you know, at least the answers got, you know, the questions got answered thoroughly. And so, you know, of course, you know, if we can have you back on to finish off the rest at some other time, that'd be great. And want to wish you luck for in running there in Utah. So with only about, you said, 5 minutes before you've got to go, if there's anything that you would like to get out to the folks that we did not cover tonight, either about the Constitution Party or for your run for the U.S. House?
Yeah, I would like to. Thank you for that. As I've been, I live in Tooele County, but it's really close to Salt Lake City, and so my family makes it to Salt Lake City all the time for shopping purposes and everything like that. And occasionally while we're out there driving around, we'll come across a United States flag that's being flown. Every now and again, when you look up the United States flag, you'll sit there and you'll see that there's rips and tears in it, that it hasn't been taken care of properly. And every time I see that, I feel in my heart the sadness that comes. Just because of the condition of this flag is, my grandpa served in World War I, and I did not know him. He died when my mom was 12 years old, but I do have a great respect for our servicemen. And I asked the question, why did the owners of these flags that they're flying let them fall into this state of repair? Is it because they were busy with life? Were they making money? Were they raising families? Were they going on vacation? Was it just out of sight? What was the reason? Was it just plain forgotten? Or could it be that they were at a point that they were past caring about it? No matter what the reason, I feel really, really bad when I see flags in this thing. So we sit there and we look at the Pledge of Allegiance, where it says, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. And if we take the Pledge of Allegiance and we change that word to I pledge allegiance to the flag to I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the United States of America, since it's what the Republic stands for, it takes on a whole new meaning. So when I was in eighth grade, I was back in Washington, D.C. as a field trip with other eighth graders from my class. I saw that they had taken these huge amounts of effort to protect the original Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. They had entombed them in glass. If there's a nuclear bomb that goes off, it goes down into a vault and everything like that.
Wow.
But that makes me wonder why we don't do such a thing for the principles that are found in the Constitution. So if it was represented by the flag, would it look like one of those that was torn and tattered and ready to be retired? Does it show the signs of neglect for many years? Is it because we're too busy with life, making money, raising families, working multiple jobs, or being entertained, going on vacation? Has the Constitution been abandoned and forgotten? Could we say that it is actually missing and that we need to find it? I know our nation was founded on amazing God-inspired principles, and they've allowed us, as I said earlier in the program, to achieve miraculous results. After years of neglect, though, we see that things are spoiling in this land, and we're more concerned to something is legal, whether it's lawful for us to do something, rather than if it's right for us to do something. So we need to reestablish the principles that made this country great. It's up to us to fly our flag or our Constitution respectfully, to take care of this great nation, to stand on principles no matter what. My name is Jonathan Girard, and I'm running for U.S. Congress District Number 2 in Utah, and I would surely love your support and also your support to the Constitution Party and any other candidate that will stand on principles, no matter what affiliation they are.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much. And as I said, what I'll do is I'll get the website, a link that I'll put on the descriptive part that people will see at the archive, where they can go to the Utah Constitution Party, in which they can see what your platform is, and possibly if they, you know, donate towards your efforts as well from that website. But before you go, real quick, I did want you to hear this, being the environmentalist that I am. And it's just 2.5 minutes. If you could just give me 2.5 minutes, I'd like you to hear this before you leave. And it's about solar power in Utah. So if you could humor me for a couple minutes, would that be okay?
That would be fine, Robert. Thank you.
Yeah, you don't have to answer to it. I just wanted you to hear it because, you know, to see, you know, maybe something for you to look into. But here you go. Thank
An alternative
much.
Source of energy, Utah's sun, could soon be generating lots of electricity for Southern California.
In what could become a massive solar project, specially designed towers are now going up near the Great Basin in Delta. Ed Yates takes us to a spot in our western desert.
Once built, these unique solar towers will follow Utah's desert sun as it moves across the sky. Like giant magnifying glasses, each dish will focus the sun's rays to heat exchangers that will pull off heat and convert it to steam. Steam will rocket fire these turbines that will drive the generators. Burning pieces of cardboard and wood show the intensity of the rays even from this residual magnification that hasn't even been focused yet. The California Power Consortium has already bought into the first stage of this project.
Phase one right now is for about 10 to 20 towers. Now imagine 700 acres out here with 1,000 towers, each tower with four solar dishes.
With each tower producing 75 to 100 kilowatts at 1,000 towers, that's enough electricity for 50,000 homes in Southern California. It will travel from this site about 5 miles, intersecting into the grid near the IPP plant. Panels on these dishes are made from inexpensive plastic material.
These panels are built out of rolled plastic, and that's about as cheap as you can get.
The Utah group holds patent rights on magnifying material that's impregnated inside the plastic. That will pay off in this desert, considered one of the best solar locations in the country.
The advantage here is because you're higher up, you got less atmosphere to go through.
Land here is a tenth the price of remote land in California. The whole facility costs about half what it would cost to build a coal-fired plant.
No pollutants, no CO2 to worry about, you know. And everybody's happy, and we're coming in at a better price than coal.
The future for alternative energy sources, not bad. For a start, Ed Yates, near Delta.
The Utah group has a similar project in Texas, with more on the drawing board in Nevada and Arizona. Australia, Korea, and China are also considering facilities.
All they need to just leave China out of there now. But I digress, folks. But thank you very much, Mr. Gerard, for listening to that audio. Maybe if you have some time, maybe you can possibly check that out. But once again, folks, I'd like to thank Mr. Gerard for coming in tonight. I want to wish you, sir, the best of luck there in Utah in your endeavor for the U.S. House of Representatives.
Thank you for sharing that with me, Robert. I enjoyed listening to that. I'll do some research on it, too. It's something that I've already started to look into is solar for my house. So thank
Great.
You for sharing that. I appreciate it.
You are very welcome. Well, take care and have a good night. And thanks again for coming in.
All right. Thank you.
Good night. Take care. Good night. Well, folks, one of the things I would like to bring up tonight, we've got about an hour left, is that I do have an audio I wanted to play, and then opening up for discussion, this is the recent reality check about the debates, and it is asking about the Commission on Presidential Debates. And so I like to play this. I have not, to be honest, heard it yet, but Ben Swan has not ever failed Bard's logic before on putting in some good information. So I will play this, and since the debates were just last night and we are looking to see a debate on the 23rd of October, including the Constitution Party's Virgil Goode and the Libertarian Party, Gary Johnson, as long as the Green Party's Jill Stein, and there's one more party, I must admit, perhaps someone could educate me on which that fourth party is and who the candidate is as well. So I will play the audio, and then we will open up the mics first with Kelly, then I believe we have Chris here on the line to chime in and talk about this and perhaps the lawsuit that the Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson is the language is being, I believe, argued by his running mate, Mr. Gray, about getting Gary Johnson and others, or third-party candidates, on the presidential debates.
We carried it live as President Obama and Governor Mitt Romney held their first of three presidential debates. But one local teacher was surprised to find out with her students recently that these two men aren't the only two running for president. So why are there only two candidates debating? Ben has the reality check. You won't see anywhere else.
The email I received was from Karen, a computer teacher at Queen of Peace Elementary School. Karen's working with sixth graders on a poster project about the campaign. Quote, I'm having the students research the candidates, finding facts, developing a campaign poster, and then voting on election day. We did an early voting experience yesterday before they did any research. I then found a website that listed all of the candidates that were running. And surprise to everyone, there is more than Romney and Obama running. Well, Karen's right on. There are more candidates running. In fact, here in Ohio, there are at least nine candidates on the ballot. Aside from the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, the Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, the Green Party, even the modern-day Whig Party. So the question, why, if we're not a two-party country, do we have debates that include candidates from only major parties? Well, the answer is actually pretty simple. It's something called the Commission on Presidential Debates. The CPD was established in 1987. According to its website, its mission is to ensure that debates, as a permanent part of every general election, provide the best possible information to viewers and listeners. Well, what a noble mission. But it begs the question, if the goal is to provide the best possible information to viewers and listeners, how can you do that with only two candidates being given time to speak? You do have to have some criteria, though, don't you? Well, of course. And the CPD has three criteria. In order to be included, a candidate, number one, must meet the constitutional requirements to be elected president. Understandable. Why allow someone to debate if they can't legally become president? Number two, they must be on the ballot in enough states to win the Electoral College. Again, understandable. If a candidate cannot mathematically win, there's no reason to put them in a national debate. But then there's number three. They must have received at least 15% support in five national polls. Well, that one is much less reasonable. But that 15% support rule is fairly new. In fact, how the CPD came into existence is pretty interesting. In 1976, 1980, and 1984, the League of Women Voters moderated presidential debates. They then walked away from it, saying that the demands of the two parties, Republican and Democrat, would perpetuate a fraud on the American people. The CPD, the Commission on Presidential Debates, as we know it today, was then formed by the Republican and Democrat parties. The commission is headed up by Frank Fahrenkamp, a former head of the Republican National Committee, and former Clinton White House Press Secretary Michael D. McCurry. So let's be clear. A debate commission that's run by former bigwigs from the Republican and Democrat parties and creates a 15% polling rule in five national polls isn't trying to create inclusion. They're trying to prevent it. If you don't have the money of the two big parties, getting your name out nationally to get into those polls, well, it can only happen if you're a billionaire like Ross Perot. Aside from billionaires, no one else has a chance. This lack of inclusion is finally getting some attention, though. This year's debates, which are funded by sponsors, just lost three of their 10 sponsors, Philips Electronics, BBH New York, and the YWCA. They have all pulled their sponsor money because of the lack of inclusion of one particular candidate, Libertarian candidate and former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. Governor Johnson is the next highest polling candidate after President Obama and Governor Romney. But when he is included in polling, the effect he's having is significant. For instance, on Wednesday, Gravis Marketing and Capital Correspondent released results from Ohio from a poll conducted September 21st through the 22nd. That poll included 594 likely voters, and it covered the presidential race and the Senate elections. Take a look. In that poll, Obama-Biden, 45%. Other or unsure, 10%. Romney-Ryan, 44%. But then, Gary Johnson's name was added, and here's how the numbers shook out then. Johnson, 10%. Obama-Biden, 44%. Other unsure, 7%. Romney-Ryan, 37%. So what you need to know, the fastest growing segment of the American electorate, independent voters. 43% of undecided swing voters are independents, and it's all about trajectory. Independent voters have been on the rise, while the parties have been playing to a shrinking base. There are now six states where independents outnumber both Republicans and Democrats. And that growing segment of the population isn't looking for fewer options. They're looking for more. This election could be an historic last for the control of this two-party system. And that is Reality Check.
If you'd like to make your voice heard on the story, head over to Ben's Facebook page. Find it by searching Ben Swan, WXIX.
Okay, first we've got Kelly, if you'd like to chime in on that. And then I believe we have Chris on the line. So go ahead, Kelly, and then Chris. And, of course, if anyone else would like to call and chime in on that, feel free at area code 347-945-7428. The floor is yours, Kelly.
Well, thanks, Robert. I'm just pinging off the wall. I'm jumping in my chair. What I saw last night, oh, I'm just so excited. I mean, that was a great clip. I really like Ben Swan. Last night I was watching the debates, and it was the after the debate discussion, and I saw this poll, and I have my hot little hand on it right now. It's like, oh, my gosh. It was on the TV, but this was not on the CNN website. We have, it's a CNN or it's the results. The most important question, what's the most important question of a debate like this? Who are you going to vote for? Okay, that's obviously the most important question. It wasn't on the CNN website. All right, remember these numbers, 35-18-47. This is a CNN or post-debate poll. Who did debate make you more likely to vote for? Who are you going to vote for? Romney, 35%. Obama, 18%. Neither was the winner at 47%. And I saw that last time. I'm like, why? Well, it's commercially came back. There it is. Oh, my gosh. I wrote it down. Of course, I called in the Sammy Show last night. I was so excited. The third party is so vile right now. It's unbelievable. And so what is going on here? I was hunting. And immediately, CNN, if you were not educated in what to look for, your mind would go on the CNN poll. Who won the debate? Oh, 65% Romney, 25% Obama. You're not including the question, the most important. I'm hunting. Oh, it's, amongst Latinos, it's amongst men and women. And then, of course, they always show the polls, the different polls, New York Times, LA Times, whatever. It's a close race. Too close to call. Again, does that cause people to jump back in line in the donkey elephant game? But they immediately took the person's mind off of the neither. Now it's not a conspiracy. I don't have my tinfoil hat on tonight. Maybe Chris does. But just before I got on listening to your show, I was watching this killer promo video for a book. It's called No Debate by George Farah, and he discusses the Commission on Presidential Debates. There has been a secret agreement between the donkeys and the elephants, basically, and of course the three criteria that Ben Swan just listed. It's a contract, okay? This whole thing is a contract. Yeah, we'll debate if we get control of the debate, and we also have the right to refuse any third-party candidate that wants to debate. That's why Gary Johnson filed a lawsuit. So this is a private contract in the media. And I've got some quotes here from some people you may have heard of, like Walter Cronkite. Let's start with his, because he figured out this has been going on for decades, folks. This is Walter Cronkite. The debates are part of the unconscionable fraud that our political campaigns have become. They should be charged with sabotaging the electoral process. Steve Forbes said this: the debate commission is a corrupt duopoly. Jesse Ventura: the debate commission is just a clear case against, again, the two parties banding together to keep down the rise of a third party. I think the public should be outraged over this. And Jesse Ventura, by the way, Minnesota opened it up to independent. That's how he won. He wasn't doing well in the primaries, and then they found some way to get an independent, and they got him on a gubernatorial debate. And not only did he win, but the voter turnout was increased by like 10 or 15% of normal. And that increase, obviously it's disenfranchised voters who came in and they voted and they got Jesse Ventura in as governor. We got one more quote. This is from George Herbert Walker Bush, the first book of president. All right. So his comments about the debates: I'm trying to forget the whole damn experience of those debates because I think it's too much show business and too much prompting too much artificiality and not really debates. They're rehearsed appearances. In the video I posted, Robert, I posted it onto your Facebook page. You can watch this video and your mouth just drops. It's like, no wonder why. And of course, American people, God bless them, I love them. We're smart, we're figuring it out, we're getting power. Neither. 47% from last night's CNN poll, that I'm going to bet somebody lost their job at CNN because they posted that on TV, but it is not. I couldn't find it on CNN's website. But 47% was the winner of neither. I'm excited, but I'm frustrated, okay?
Understood, Kelly. Understood. Well, Chris, I see you on there. Are you still there?
Sure, I was filling my dinner dish. What are you doing?
All right, what's for dinner? Beef, what's for dinner?
No. A whole bunch of combo stuff. I'm an Alaskan. I'll eat while I talk to you. No, I'll wait. You know what, Kelly? Yeah, Kelly kept me up to what, 1:30 last night talking about this stuff? I'm like, okay, Kelly.
It wasn't that late.
I gotta go, man. Yeah, you know, I mean,
you know what's coffee at 10 o'clock at night would do.
No, I wouldn't do that. The other point that's important to make here is that, you know, that's the second time I've heard that 42%. You remember the gentleman that we interviewed, the U.S. House rep candidate from Las Vegas? He was the first one that said 42 because we had been running on some old data, 38%, 39%. And mm-hmm. so I ran with that 42. So that was just confirmed by Ben Swan. So I just, you know, all I got to do is, you know, find the actual clear link on the numbers of independents. But if you look at, you know, not to bring up the negative of what's occurring to people like us who are having discussions about third parties, but the war against us. I just had some people today tell me that, you know, it's increasing. And then people are even going into Twitter accounts and you know, they will, you know, you can tell Twitter that this person's doing spam, even if they're not. I had a friend that literally hardly ever uses their Twitter except listens to, you know, read stuff off of it, hardly ever sends anything out, and they went into suspension. I said, these people, the pressure's on. And Kelly's absolutely correct. Whoever posted that number, and I saw the screenshot that he put on my group earlier, and that video, I have not had a chance to watch it, Kelly, but my wife was watching it, and she said it's incredible. But, you know, we've known this. I mean, anybody who's tracked the crime against the Paul organization all the way back to Maine, you know, is already clear of the debacle of what this two-party primary system is. It's a joke. The only reason, and I guess the sad part of it is the numbers of people who have just rolled over. That's the sad part, because if those people would have got up and demanded, I mean, you think about it, if all those millions of people who just gave up and said, well, that's the way it is, and my criminal's better than your criminal, would have got up and would have boycotted, you know, like the RNC and said, if you do not allow proper procedures at the RNC, we will not vote for your guy. And like 2-3 million people would have actually, you know, signed a petition and sent it there. They would have rolled over. But you see, people don't fight. You know, they keep waiting for somebody else to fight. They keep waiting for somebody else, you know, to say the punchline or, you know, or nail somebody for them. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's just this thing where you got to get up and realize you're the masses. The only reason conservatives fail in this country is because they don't unify. They're so busy fighting amongst themselves over this issue or that policy, or my candidate stands for this and your candidate stands for that, and so they're evil and mine's good. And they're so busy fighting all the time that the crooks and the moderates walk right up the middle and steal the elections and then lose. And you gotta step back from yourself sometimes and go, I'm part of the problem, you know, and get shut off, unplug, as Rex said, and start educating yourself. Look at the numbers. When you have what Kelly put out, was it 47%? But when you put out 42% of the country's independence, and that's a 20% increase in less than 20 years, you go, huh, important point. Now, why would 20% quit, most of them, the Republican Party? Why would they quit? Oh, okay, well, here's why they quit. If 20% quit, maybe, you know, especially for people who love to follow numbers or the crowd or run with the lemons off the cliff, well, the lemons are running out of the party. Why is it that you, who are so typically following the group, not following the group, you know, for the ones that can't actually think for themselves, you know? And that's all we've been talking about, guys, for, I don't know, when did this conversation start? You know, I don't even remember now. Somewhere around the convention or just before, I started, you know, asking questions, and next thing you know, we're all on this like crazy. And you know, I had a, I don't know, a good 2-hour conversation with Randy today, who is the vice chair of the Constitution Party. And
I did that too today, Chris.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many people are right on that edge, like Kelly talks about. They're right there. You don't get it. Just step over the line. You will. There's no cliff there. It's just a line on the ground. You know, you want to change. Yeah, sorry, Kelly.
Hey, I want to ask you the clarification. There's 42 and there's 47%. You say 42, is that the independent something?
Independent. Yeah, that's the newest figure I've heard. Unverified, but I'm pretty sure it's true. I have verified at 38, but that's 2011.
Okay, yeah, because last night I told you, man, we got to get a screenshot somehow. Well, I got one today, but last night you said when they did the replay, your wife caught it, and it was 47 neither. So, folks, I keep saying this number, 35-18-47, 35-18-47. It's 35 Romney, 18 Boo-Boo, and then 47 neither.
Well, you know what gets me? I mean, honestly, what gets me?
Hilarious.
I get the 18% Obama. I don't get the 35% Romney. Who do they think this guy is? A Republican? That's the one I don't get. Do they have, like, you know, maybe not enough people wear their tinfoil hats to protect their brains from being wiped out? And a whole new profile of this guy's life, business, and governorship, and what he did with at the Olympics by overspending historical amounts that had John McCain stand on the floor screaming, "Mr. President, this is an outrage. We need an investigation." 4 years later, hey, everybody, this is the guy we need to run our country. Do they just wipe that out of people's minds? Kelly? Robert? We need to sell more tinfoil hats.
Well, they don't wipe it out of people's mind. They just give you the lesser of two evils, you know, and you feel guilty. You feel terribly guilty, but you got to do it anyway because you don't. This is representation by repugnancy. Okay, one party makes their followers so repugnant of the others, i.e., you know, Republicans make Obama so repugnant that they.
Mm-hmm.
The constant mantra, well, we got to get Obama out of the office. Well, in 4 years, if this representation by repugnancy occurs, the Democrats are going to win if Romney wins, okay? The Democrats are going to win again through repugnancy. This is the damages, and the founding fathers hated political parties, by the way. You know, there's quotes, somebody can, I've read them, I can't remember them right now, but it's dangerous.
You know, nobody's going to want to hear that. Can you hear me okay, guys? I keep putting my phone on not mute. I don't want you
now.
I don't want you to hear me eating. You Ohioan. Anyway.
I know.
I don't. Too nobody genteel. Wants to hear. Yeah. No. Yeah. All right.
Go ahead.
Right. Oh my God. Okay. Anyway. Here's the thing that nobody wants to hear. And I'm going to say it, and then everybody get mad at me, and they can run around all the Facebook groups and smear me and whatever they want to do. I don't care. Whatever. This is a handoff. This is not an election. They're both controlled by the same people. It is a handoff, not an election. They don't care if Obama loses. They don't care if Romney wins. It don't matter. The same agenda is going to roll forward. That's my opinion. Am I wrong?
I think there's a lot of validity in that, especially since if you look at the folks who are, or I should say, who have contributed to Obama, and a lot of those are now contributing to Romney's campaign. And well, and look at both of their records. I mean, much of what Obama has done, nationwide, is what Romney did in Massachusetts. I mean, that's why in that debate, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I mean, I can't imagine what that debate was like last night. I mean, what the heck are they going to talk about? I mean, what are they going to disagree on? I mean, you know, except for, you know, what they said, it's just, you know, words, smoke and mirrors.
Kelly, you watched it. Kelly, no, I'm on mute again. Kelly, you watched it. Chime in.
Oh, you watched that thing last night?
Oh,
I mean, I'm going to, but, you know, just because I have to. But
I'm going to
here's some numbers, okay? There is a difference between...
You didn't hear us.
But, no, I'm here. Can you hear me?
No, I asked you, you watched the debate. Robert was saying neither one of us watched the debate because I didn't want to get sick to my stomach.
Plus, I was supposed to be on air last night.
What would they actually debate? I mean, what did they talk about, Kelly? You watched it.
Yeah, I watched it. You know, you got to know what your opposition's doing, so I watched it. They talked about Medicare, and they both said, "Oh yeah, Medicare and Social Security will continue." I mean, I really don't want to talk about it after watching this video, but it's basically prearranged. It's rather interesting,
for the folks who have not watched it, I did record it, and I do have a clip here from the Romney and Obama debate, and it's only about a minute of the debate, but I think that it's a really good summary of the debate that we heard between Romney and Obama.
Mr. President, just how different are you from Governor Romney?
Now, let me be clear. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things. For instance, abortion. He was pro-choice most of his adult life. So was I. But he changed his position when he became presidential candidate Romney.
Hold on.
Now, let's take guns. Now, Governor Romney and I, we were in complete agreement on gun control. Now, that is, until he changed his mind.
But I...
And on health care, well, I was so inspired by Romneycare that I nationalized it and called it Obamacare.
Whoa.
But now, presidential candidate Romney is against the individual mandate and universal health care. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things. But this presidential candidate Romney, I don't even know the guy. Then again, he doesn't seem to know himself.
Oh, come on. Governor Romney?
Getting our future is responsible for the content of this message.
I love that. I can laugh no matter how many times I hear that. But that was a debate between Romney and Obama last night. Okay, go ahead, Kelly. Sorry about that. I couldn't help myself.
I want to pass. I'm totaling up the numbers given campaign contributions to Obama and Romney. They both received funding from Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Citigroup. They're the banksters. I'm running some quick numbers here to give a tally, because when I run these numbers, there will be a difference between the two. The difference will be in campaign contribution from the banksters. So I'm going to run these numbers quick, and I'll get back to you.
So there you have it, Robert.
While he's running... Now,
that means I've quit eating so I can talk.
Go ahead, man. Chew the rest. This is organic radio.
Yeah. No, I just think it's hilarious. We've all known each other for a while. Is any of this surprise?
No. And neither is Romney losing so badly in the electoral count, because this is what we've been saying for the past, five, 6 months, that, you know, a moderate Republican, and I'm giving, and that's a moderate at best, Republican has not won in the general election in over in 40 years. They've tried this before. They tried it with, you know, Dole. They tried it with McCain. They tried it with, you know, and it has not worked. What makes it, they thought that the folks were going to hate Obama so much, fear Obama so much, that they were just going to pull the lever for anybody. Well, now it's becoming quite apparent that that's not going to happen. So, but I mean, yeah, to answer your question shortly, Chris, no, none of this comes to the surprise of any of us, at least none of us who were, you know, standing on our soapbox or on top of a hill trying to scream to the crowds, Romney cannot win. Romney, and then they try to say, you're divisive. You're just being divisive. No, we're telling you what's going to happen. I'm not saying, you know, we're proselytizing or whatever that's called or telling the future or whatever, but hello, follow history. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And we are looking to have a repeat of the 2008 election.
Right. Well, and I've never been able to predict that. I know some other guys are bolder with that Romney can't win thing than I have been, because I can't honestly say that, because I don't know. I don't know how well they fixed how many machines. I mean, I just don't know. So, you know, in a fair election, probably not. But, you know, who knows with the machines. So that's always been one that I've had a trouble, you know, being a quote on.
I would be very shocked if it's Obama. Go ahead.
Well, like, you don't, yeah, but you don't know. Every state has voting machines. You know, I mean, so there you go. I mean, that's what I tell these people all the time. What are you worried about? If, you know, Romney's, you know, still, I mean, who knows what happened in the swing states because of his the debate performance, which I haven't seen, and I know I'll break down and watch it, you know, and make sure I, you know, put garlic around my neck and stuff and watch the dang debate. But
I'd rather be bitten by a vampire than this guy. Yeah.
His polls might bump a little because everybody thought he did so great, and Obama looked a little bit sheepish, and who knows. But then he gets out on the campaign trail because he's all full of himself, and he's rebooted, as Christie said, for the 200th time, and gets out there and opens his mouth again.
Who knows? Running would be like an old bad computer. You have to keep rebooting it.
Oh my gosh! And here's the thing, and I'll say this to anybody: so what if he wins? What if we won? So Obama gets kicked out. What are the policy changes? What is it? What is different in the last 2 years with a full control of the House and John Boehner? What has stopped from happening on the Obama watch? NADA.
Right.
In fact, NDAA, if we're going to say NADA, they did that too, by the way. Nothing. They gave him everything he wanted, including, wait for it, funded Obamacare for him. Did you hear that, everybody? Funded Obamacare. What makes you think, even if he wins, that anything is going to change? What about the Middle East? What is his foreign policy? Did they have anything on foreign policy? And if they did, it's a lie, because people have no clue what's going on in the Middle East, what's really going on in the Middle East. And we're going to have, that's going to be a, go ahead. Who is it, Rick?
Here is a stark difference between the Romulan and Obubu.
that kills me every time you say that.
Obubu.
Go ahead, man.
There was a real stark difference, yes, a little bit subtle. Obama was saying, you know, I'm defending Obamacare. Of course, it's named after me, but, I think it's a good idea. We got to protect people who just da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Romney says, you know, I think a better plan is that the federal government turns the money back over to the governors, and the governors decide what they should do with the money. Now, a number of governors really suggested that in a governor's conference. Wait a minute. Did you just... Oh, yeah, federal government, that should, you know, and I was like, is there a difference? Well, yeah, the state runs it versus the Fed. Yeah, I kind of like that. But the federal government's still going to get money for health care. What's the problem here, folks? Anyway, all right, I got the numbers run. And let's see here. We had, it's a 2-to-1 spending from the Bilderbergers. I call them Bilderbergers, the money people, the banksters, a little bit more properly named, the banksters.
Here we go. I'm going to go Obama, then Romney. Goldman Sachs contributed $1 million plus to a boo-boo, $362,000 to the Romulan. J.P. Morgan Chase, $508,800 to a boo-boo, $112,350 to the Romulan. Citigroup, $736,771 to Obama, $57,000 with the Romulan. I guess they didn't like him, but they still gave him money, I guess. All right, Morgan Stanley, a financial institution, really helped the Romulan there, but Morgan Stanley gave $512,000 to Abubu and right around $800,000 for Romney. And that Obama got 2.1. I mean, again, you know, the Democrats are saying, oh, these corporations are evil, bad, 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 bad corporations. Oh, look who's funding them. Yeah, that's why the occupiers show up, because, oh, that's right, it's okay because it's our bad guy. So Obama got funding from the banksters at a ratio of 2 to 1 over Romney. And that kind of reminds me of, you know, I had these little, he might be a Bilderberger. You know, he's part of a secret organization, yet denies existence. You might be a Bilderberger. If you only allow two people in a debate, you might be a Bilderberger. If you work for the Federal Reserve, put money and talk to QE3, you might be a Bilderberger. If you fund both political parties expecting future favors, you might be a Bilderberger.
You know, every time I heard you say Bilderberger, I have to admit, Kelly, I kept seeing a big, fat, juicy cheeseburger. I don't know. Like, Bilderberger burger, you know? I kept thinking, I'm not even hungry, and I kept thinking, man, just build a burger, you know? This is a restaurant here. It's like, Bilderberger. But anyway, I digress.
Let me explain a little bit about the Bilderbergers, okay? I was talking to I went to a roundtable buffet today talking to John. He's this hilarious guy. We talk politics. He's way ahead of the curve of most people. He's talking Agenda 21. It's Agenda 21. It's worldwide. Yeah, I know. It's a lot of that. Anyway, the Bilderberger, okay, where do these plans that just assimilate, you know, from America to Canada or other countries into here, this environmental green stuff, by the way, the New World Order types love environmentalism because it's shutting down industry and yada, yada. But anyway, where did the Bilderberger originate? It was a Bilderberger hotel, and I think it was in Belgium. It was in Europe. Well, what happened was somebody discovered that, wait a minute, there's a whole bunch of big, big heads of state from all over the world, states of the media, media people from all over, what? And where they were first caught in their annual conference was at the Bilderberger Hotel. David Icke went to one of these later. He found out about it. And he reported, I don't know if anybody's, David Icke used to be a British soccer player. He's an incredible communicator. He's got a huge following. He's a little bit strange in some of his other stuff, but he's, you know, he's reporting what other people already said, but he enunciates it very well. Okay, he went to one of these. For 2 days, it was open doors, and anybody could go in. The third day, it was closed session. He noticed all these heads of states from all over the place, media people, secretary of states. It was unbelievable. He said, I can't believe they're Republican, conservative. He's British, David Icke is. So he's seeing British and British heads of state who are conservative, liberal. He goes after country down this list, and he said, the most important, amazing thing that I realized was that there was no media attention whatsoever. You have, of course, the UN gets covered a lot, but no, this annual meeting, there was absolutely no media, and they had their start when they first got caught in the Bilderberger Hotel, and that's why they call them Bilderbergers.
I still kept seeing that big old burger, but
yeah, well, you know, if your name is Robert Jetter and you like to build a massive hamburger, you might be a Bilderberger.
That's great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Kelly. And I've got the Constitution Party home here for the Utah, and I'd just like to go down for a second since we did have those folks on tonight. And I know we've talked about down ballots, and we know that the Libertarian Party has a lot of down ballots as well. But since we had the Utah on, this is
565.
What was that, Chris?
565.
565. Well, here's what they've gotten. Here's what they have in Utah. Of course, they have Virgil Goode for president, and they have Jim Clymer for vice president. But they also have Sean McCausland for the U.S. Senate, Sherry Phipps, U.S. House 1, Jonathan Girard, who was the guest tonight, U.S. House 2, Utah Constitutional Office candidates for governor. So they have someone running for governor. That's Kirk Pearson. Lieutenant Governor Tim Alders. State Auditor Richard Proctor. For Utah Senate candidates, State Senate 24. For the Utah House of Representatives, they have State Representative Becky Maddox for 1. William Bodine for 21. These are districts, I guess. Marilee Roos, 22. Scott Morgan, 27. Russell Hatch, 50. Benjamin Norton, 59. Ken Bauer, 65. Paul Kalum, 68. Al Brown for 70. Paul Seve, 71. Randall Hinton, 75. And they also have city county or county candidates. You have John Swayze for the Dutch, I can't even pronounce it, Jacinth County Commission, and Larry Ballard for the Utah County Commissioner seat. Now, when we asked earlier in the interview on whether they had, you know, an organization here in Utah, it definitely appears that they do. And I think I might have missed Tristan Meacham, which is the U.S. Senate candidate, District 24, and I didn't want to omit anyone in that list. So, Chris, if you got anything you'd like to chime in about through Chomps on your Build-A-Burger or Kelly, go ahead.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, I'm good. I think I'm saying too much tonight. I'm so excited. My mouth is just, it's called Wateria, which is diarrhea of the mouth. So
Okay, that was really great, being that I just ate dinner.
Oh, you got a stronger stomach tonight, Chris.
Me? Yeah, you're right. Anyway, here's a couple different things. One thing to think about, and this is why I have no problem doing what I'm doing. There's a whole bunch of states that it doesn't blessed matter who you vote for because Obama's up 9,000%. You know, if you live in a blue state and you're even beginning to think about, you know, supporting a third party, okay, well, if you go out there, take my state, which is about as blue can get, and I have Virgil Goode on the candidacy, and I go out and I vote for him and I help him get up about 5% of the state, it helps the party. Yeah, he doesn't win. You know, Obama's going to win anyway. I help the party. Same with the Libertarian Party. But for the Constitution Party, building that down ballot access, you know, building those criteria that makes it easier for you to get on the ballot next time. So you have to step back and ask yourself, you know, can I play this thing from multiple strategies? Yes, you can. I think the challenge that people have, and I've learned this, you know, through this whole educational process, is they get all caught up in the top of the ticket. And they get all caught up in, you know, trying to elect a president. What you don't understand, and I say this again, presidents are elected state by state. National polls mean doo-doo. You know what I mean? They mean nothing. And what Kelly was saying, and also what I've seen on other polls, is they only ask you about the top two-tier candidates. And then every once in a while, somebody will throw out some small number poll that says, oh, Johnson's at, you know, 2% or 10% or 8% or whatever. But it's not an active polling environment that is a positive environment for that. I've actually had somebody today tell me that they called and they said, you know, who do you want to vote for? And they said, Johnson. And they hung up on him, the pollster. Jeez. So, you know, it's all bull crap. It's all skewed.
Right.
All crap. It's all psychology. It's all marketing. In your state, where do you live? Who is on the ballot? Check it out. Call the campaigns. Find out find out if your guy is, you know, how close your guy is to accomplishing something. Make smart choices with your vote. Don't not vote your conscience. I would never say that to anybody. Vote for who you want. I'm just saying, think about it. Step back.
Well,
take emotion out of it. Use your brain.
I want to throw out something out as an option. In many states, the general election is open, meaning if you're a registered Republican and you still feel the need to stay in the Republican Party, just don't tell anybody, but vote for an independent. Vote for somebody else but. That is, if your state allows, and I was seriously trying to find that today, and I ran out of time but for California, but if your state allows you to cross over, you can still stay a Republican.
It's federal election. So, it's federal election. There's no requirements.
Okay, so
that's
you can cross over.
Primary.
Yeah, you can cross over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this Sean put something in the chat that made me think that to chime in is there is a party I'd really like to have some of their candidates on. They're kind of hard to find. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm not in chat. I'm working on my site as you're.
Sean mentioned something in the chat, and it made me think of some folks from a party I'd really like to have in here, but they're kind of hard to get a hold of, and that is folks from the Bacon Party. And I'd really like to hear what they have to say, you know, about the state of the nation and what their policies and platform will be. So if anyone knows anyone from the Bacon Party.
That's the Build Your Burger group.
Okay.
Your bacon cheeseburger. It's all tied together. It's a conspiracy. You know, Shelly and I both, and all three of us have started this whole state sovereignty, you know, discussion and this class that we're trying to all get together back on and
bring
people together in. And here's something.
I think after the election, maybe a little easier to get that going.
Yeah, maybe. You know, we'll see how they go. But here's the key. All right. Winning, and this is actually at the top of one of my groups. It says, winning the battle in this country is more than the man at the top of the ticket. America is going to get repaired from the bottom up. You have to win seats in the House and the Senate, number one. Who are your down-ballot people? You know, when you look at, you know, I've heard people say, well, we got to get a rhino, even if it's just a rhino, we got to replace that Democrat. No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Between the two top third-party candidates, there's almost, let's see, 670 down-ballot people you can look at in those two parties. Now, you also have to win the seats in the state houses. Okay, and there's down-ballot candidate options for that. You also have to win seats in your county and your local offices, including your sheriff's department. If
mm-hmm.
you want to get constitutional, you've only got one shot at the national vote, but you've got hundreds of options throughout this country at your state and U.S. House and Senate levels that you can invest yourself into, because I've heard a bunch of people in our conversation say, well, I'm not going to vote, you know, I'm not going to worry about the presidential election, you know, Romney's not my guy, so I'm going to focus on my state. That's what they tell me. And then I go, well, then you should be on my group, because that's what we're investigating, is who are the best candidates for the states. You know, you have to think outside the box. You will not win or lose. Whoever gets in that presidential seat is one man. You got 538 other people, or 535 other people to deal with. That's right. They give three fake electors for Washington, D.C. But, you know, you've got this other batch of people that run the country, and they need to be replaced.
Well, I know in the first district here in Ohio, there is a libertarian candidate for the U.S. Running for U.S. House Representative.
Well, let me add this to the conversation, because there's some confusion about libertarians, and Kelly can verify this. There's a lot of pro-life libertarians out there. Am I right, Kelly? Kelly fell asleep.
Hi, Arwen.
He's typing something. No, there he is.
Good pro-life Kelly. Libertarian, that would be me.
Huh?
The pro-life libertarian, he said that would be me.
Yeah, and there's more. You know, I mean, you gotta.
Howard Brown, who wrote the 800 and some libertarian points, he said in his book, "I am pro-life, but we should not put this issue in the hands of the federal government. Why put more issues in the hands of the federal government to mess up even further?"
You know why? Because people keep voting for candidates who tell them they'll fix it. That's why people keep putting it in the hands of the federal government. And they lie.
Yeah.
And then you give them your money and you give them your vote. And they get in there and they tell you why they couldn't do it. 30-some years later, nothing's changed. And we still fund Planned Parenthood. So quit expecting the federal government to fix it. They're not going to. Unless you had a House and Senate and a guy like Virgil Goode in there, you know what I mean, who just absolutely will shut it down, you know. I mean, but that ain't going to happen right now. Even if he won, you know, he's still got the battle of the Democrats and the Republicans in the House and the Senate. You know, this is 150 years to get us here, or at least 100 years, or at least since since Lincoln took away all of our states' rights, you know what I mean? And it just ain't going to turn overnight. Not without a revolution, not without a war, not without something crazy going on. All that ain't going to happen. So, you know, you've got to work through the system. So if you want to empower the system, you have to empower your state. And empowering your state also includes your U.S. Senate and your House. You know, so you gotta wake up, people.
Well, at this time, we only have, unfortunately, about 9 minutes, you know, left in the show. And I would like to bring in someone from, I believe they even have their own Blog Talk Radio show. They could correct me if I'm wrong, but speaking of correctly, this is constitutionally correct. I am opening up your mic if you'd like to chime in. It looks like you had a meeting you're at tonight, or a conference call, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about that, or other things in the time we have allotted, that would be great. Your mic is live. And so, indeed, you do have a Blog Talk Radio show, correct?
Indeed, I do, called Constitutionally Correct of All Things.
Listen to that. Well, if you'd like to give a little plug into the show, I've got no problem with that. If you could say what dates or what days and times that's on.
Thank you. Well, that's a problem that I'm rethinking right now. And I've not been running a consistent show. The only thing I've been consistently doing, really, is running Constitution Party Campaign Central every Wednesday evening. And then the rest of it, as I've been getting people to interview and stuff, I've been kind of doing some hit or miss things. But I've been talking with two of my co-hosts that I've done the shows with, and really thinking about revamping it, setting down a hardcore time that we're going to do it every night, at least 5 nights a week, and, you know, really start pumping out some great information and, you know, give people the opportunity to come on and really start talking about these things. I had the opportunity to speak with Chris, and, you know, we in the midst of that, you know, we all have more learning we need to do about this great document called the Constitution, because, you know, we talk about upholding it, and I would challenge most of your listeners here about how well they actually know it, and I think I could probably challenge them on a little bit of it. But that's kind of what we're looking at, and I'm kind of redoing it, but thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Would you like to see politicians politicians held to account of their knowledge of the Constitution in a constitutional challenge?
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be a whole lot of fun.
Oh my gosh.
So here's the thing,
talk.
You know, I've gone around to tea parties and stuff where, you know, they're all championing the Constitution, and I've had the opportunity to speak, and I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to demonstrate to you, every single one of you here, unless you've heard me speak, I'm going to demonstrate to you that you do not know the Constitution like you should, and I simply ask a question. Who has the constitutional authority to appoint officers in the military? And when you get the answer, you know, I'm not going to give it away, because we're going to talk about this at another time. I think we might even do that on the show on Sunday night where Chris is going to be interviewing me.
Well, actually, I was just getting ready to mention that. See, you took my thunder. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just joking.
I don't care. No, but anyway, I was just going to mention, yes, we are going to have you come on this Sunday, and you are the vice chairman of the Constitution Party. And we are going to be interviewing you, yes, this Sunday evening, which is October the 6th. Is it the 6th? 7th? Thank you, Michelle. That was my wife. Thank you, honey.
Can I ask a question of the challenger here with the constitutional challenge? I want to do a multiple choice question, all right? The right to the writ of habeas corpus, is it found in Article 4 of the Bill of Rights? That's A. B would be Article 5. C would be Article 6. Or D, Article 1, Section 9. Where is the right to the writ of habeas corpus found?
My brain's dead right at this second. Hold on.
You asked me, but you're not asking me, are you, Kelly? No.
Who are you specifically asking?
The guy with the constitutional merit here, the show. Is it in Article 4, 5, 6 of the Bill of Rights, or is it in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9? You have choice A, B, C, or D.
That's the longest one, so I'm going to guess B, D. That's my thought.
Yeah, you know, it's not in... I'm going to say it's not in the Bill of Rights, and I believe because I just read it, and I don't recall reading it there. So I'm pretty certain it's not in the Bill of Rights, but it's in – go ahead.
You're correct where you're leading to. The correct answer is D, Article 1, Section 9, the right to the writ of habeas corpus was so fundamental.
Yeah, that's right. Because we were just talking the other night about Article 1, Section 2 – being the don'ts and how, you know, what some of those things pertain to.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on having a constitutional challenge
on the radio program?
Hey, I tell you what, I'd love it.
That would definitely be an interesting program. Let's go ahead and get that together and talk about that, especially if we can get it done before the election, great. If not, it's definitely something regardless, whether it's before the election or not. It would be a great show.
It would be great to challenge all the freshmen to see what they know about the Constitution. They're going to, you know, make an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. It would be great to challenge them to see just exactly what they know about what they're making an oath.
School them before they take that oath. But unfortunately, gentlemen, I only have a few minutes left here, and I want to say thank you all for coming in tonight and chiming in.
No,
of course, thank you,
Robert.
No, anytime, guys. Thank you. but anyway, I know Samuel Samford's Constitutional Conservative Unite is on shortly in about 3 minutes on Blog Talk Radio. So if people like to, if they're going to be up, if they're going to go there, honestly, I may or may not get the opportunity to go there. I've got some networking I need to do this evening. But once again, thank you, everyone, for coming in. Hope to hear you back again, everyone in the chat, listening on the archives and live, and those listening live through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. Thank you again. I will end this episode, this evening show, as I do every show, and that is from our the song from Aubrey Ashburn. There we go. And her song. Thank you, everyone, and have a good night. Take care.